Hi, my name is Dani Shirey, and thank you for stopping by my entrepreneurial podcast. Today, I'm going to be sitting down with my friend Danny Green, a California-based artist who discovered that he could paint after having a traumatic brain injury from a car accident. Let's hear his inspiring story.
You have quite an incredible story, and if you don't mind sharing a little bit about your journey to this point with how you got into your art and everything that happened with your TBI.
I'm happy to share everything I can.
Yeah.
Okay. My name is Danny Green. I'm 42 years old, born in Honolulu, Hawaii, 1977. Very good year. And I grew up primarily in Southern California, raised by a single mom. Did an outstanding job. Good person. My background has been in sales and finance. That's pretty much what I did from age 22 up to about 38 full-time. And then I continue on after that as well. But on January the 16th, 2014, I was involved in a hit-and-run drunk driving accident. I was westbound on a surface street when a gentleman collided into me in the back of my truck. He was going, from the police records, somewhere between 70 and 80 miles an hour.
Wow.
And he pushed me into oncoming traffic, which resulted in a head-on collision with another vehicle headed the opposite way in about 45 miles an hour.
Wow.
So, yeah, I don't remember very much of the accident whatsoever. I was conscious shortly after and in a lot of pain, but I was more pissed off than focused on the pain. Actually,
right.
I was pretty mad. The listed initial injuries were, of course, you know, the typical burns to the hands and face that you get from airbags.
Mm-hmm.
I had fractured bones in my face, so my right side were broken due to impact from the head-on collision. The tendon in my right hand, on the palm of my right hand, snapped from hitting the steering wheel. That wasn't much fun. And there were bones in my face that were actually broken. As it turned out, down the road, became majorly infected, which resulted in me losing my teeth.
Oh, man.
Not a good time either, so I have fake teeth. Right?
Mm-hmm.
But also, I had a TBI, a very mild brain injury, but I had what's called post-concussive syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
It really became apparent that something was very wrong a couple days after the accident, because I was seeing extremely geometric patterns on everything, and I was very photosensitive, and I was also seeing people and things that weren't there. You know, it was it wasn't like all the time, but it was very troubling, and I kept on having spells of blacking out. Like I tried to get up, you know, because I was in tremendous pain, obviously, because I had broken bones. But I'm very grateful I could walk and talk and do the thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I would get up and I just black out to the floor, and you know, it was just not a good time. So I got taken to a neurologist specialist and got the MRI and the CAT scans done. And they're like, yeah, you obviously have, you know, definitely have some brain trauma here. And you're going to have to not be around bright lights, no noises, because I was, you know, pretty traumatized too.
Mm-hmm.
Long story short, you know, you're going to have to be in a very quiet environment. No screens, no TVs, no iPads, no phones, you know, let your brain kind of just heal and rewire naturally. And, you know, I had terrible mood swings and stuff going on also, but this is kind of fast-forwarding through, like, about 2 months,
mm-hmm.
right, where I kept on going to the doctors and everything, and he suggested to me that I find quiet hobbies that I could do to pass the time and help my brain heal. And I asked him, like, well, what? He goes, well, I don't know, I'll try painting or something. So, I thought that was interesting. I never really, when I was a kid, you know, you do art. All kids do art,
mm-hmm.
you know, but I really had lost all interest in anything of that matter when I, you know, was in high school. I was really into music when I was young, and I played music, and I still play music, but I, you know, I got like F's in art class. You know, I was never an artistic person. I would consider myself to be like an artist. Does
mm-hmm.
that make sense?
Yeah.
But my girlfriend at the time, she went out to the arts and crafts store, and she bought me a couple little panels and some, you know, cheap acrylic paint and a couple paint brushes and just left them at my house. You know, she's like, hey, you know, if you feel so inclined, you know, like the doctor said, do some painting. And I didn't. I didn't even think about it because I had no interest in it. And one day I was very bored and I said to myself, well, you know, I might as well try to do some painting. So I picked up some of the panels and got some of the paints and, you know, I painted nearly a photorealistic person and with the colors and everything. It just was very intuitive to me. It was very easy. And it surprised me. And it shocked me. And it almost scared me a little bit. And I remember texting my girlfriend at the time, and I was like, oh my God, I did a painting. It's good. And she was like, oh, that's nice. You know, good for you. Yeah, it was really bizarre. And that really got me off and running. You know, flash forward 5 years later, actually took a year off of painting, so let's say 4 years of painting later, mm-hmm. you know, I get to do art shows all over the world and do fun stuff, and it's really, I consider it to be a blessing, and definitely a silver lining. People often say to me, like, oh, you're so lucky that this happened to you. You know, and for a long time, I rebuffed that, because I would say, like, well, you know, I don't know how lucky it is, but I had all these other injuries, and I'm still in constant pain, and, you know, and it's degenerative as far as my back and neck go, because my back and neck were injured as well.
Mm-hmm.
And but now I can truly see it for what it is. I'm finding the gratitude in the situation. It's really turned out to be a really lovely thing. So that's the three-penny version, as they would say.
Yeah, I mean, that's fascinating, because, you know, I've read, you know, your story on your website, but I've never heard it from you, and, you know, to kind of hear it from your perspective, it's amazing. I mean, it's so unfortunate that that happened to you, but to see what can come from trauma is really amazing.
I was completely insane the first year, and that's something that I really try to, you know, I don't talk about it a lot, but I would have extreme mood swings,
mm-hmm.
and it was very challenging. To almost feel like not in control mm-hmm. of your emotions and the way you saw things and the things that you take offense to. And it's just like, you know, a couple of years ago, my mom had surgery and she had she broke her leg, right?
Okay.
And I remember during her recovery time, she was mean as a cat, right? And my mom is the sweetest person in the world, right? But after she had her surgery, you know, at her age, when you break a leg, it's a big deal.
Right.
You know? And I just remember, you know, helping her through that process, and, you know, she was a completely different person.
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose that first year after the accident happened, it must have been very challenging for everybody around me, because, you know, not only was I seeing and hearing things that weren't there, and generally, you know, in a not a very pleasant mood most of the time, and especially if I was painting, I could not be disturbed, because it still happens where when I paint, I almost go into like a trance-like state where I just kind of I'm in flow state. I just let things happen. I don't really think about what I'm doing. Everything is just very intuitive.
Right.
But back then, in those days, if I would get interrupted painting, it'd be a big deal.
But right
now, you know, I paint live in front of thousands of people, you know, and I paint festivals or wherever, and people come up to me and talk to me, and it's a pleasure.
Right.
You know, so it's, the first year was very, very challenging, and anybody who goes through any kind of brain injury, from what I understand, no two people really cope with it the same way, because the brain is a fascinating organ, but it's not only the brain, but it's also the mind we have to deal with. It's the emotions that people go over. It's a roller coaster of everything that goes on. And when you feel like you're not completely lucid, it's scary.
Right,
it's very scary.
Yeah. But I know my mom, she kind of dealt with that whenever she had her stroke. And I was very grateful because my husband, his sister, suffered a traumatic brain injury. She was in a car accident. Having him when my mom was healing from her stroke was very helpful, because he's like, yeah, there's going to be some mood changes, but she'll come back. She might not 100% come back, but she'll come back.
Did she?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She is a little different. Actually laughs a lot more now, and she giggles about a lot of things. And adjusting to that is a little different, but, yeah, she's pretty much the same mom that we always had.
Well, good.
Yeah.
You know, that makes me happy to hear. It's interesting. You know, we think life is going to be one way, and then oftentimes it gets picked up and changed, and there you have it. You know, it's a whole new existence, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. How has some of your life experiences encouraged what you paint?
Well, you know, that's interesting. I'm very much influenced by what's in front of me at the time. You know, one of the things that I'm really focused in on now is really honing a style. Because when I first started painting, I was very excited to see all the art that's out there, all as far as contemporary art goes.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at other people's art, and I was like, wow, I want to paint like them. I want to look like, I want my art to look like this. I want it to have this kind of emotive quality. I want it to have this kind of feel. And for the first couple of years, I was really influenced by other artists. And I was really influenced by different short stories that are very easy to decipher with the eye, but yet unique to every viewer. A good example is I had an art show in London, and I'm not really recognizable. And when I was having the show, I walked up to one of my paintings where a gentleman was explaining to his date, well, I'm assuming it was his date, what the message of the painting was and what the painting means. Hung out and listened, and I kind of joined in on the conversation. I said, "Oh, please elaborate. I want to hear more about what you think this is all about." And he went through this long explanation about how the painting is the plight of the Palestinian people, clearly, and how, you know, and how the artist, used the symbolism to mean this, and how he has it all figured out. And I was like, "Wow, that's really quite insightful." You know, and I didn't, of course, I'm not a dick, really, so I was just like, totally, you know, I didn't say, like, well, I'm the artist, so, you know, that's not, I was just like, wow, that's really cool, man, like, thank you for sharing that with me, because I believe that art is very subjective, and it should be able to mean a lot of different things to a lot of different people. But to answer your question, I just paint what interests me, and I just paint what I see, as opposed to trying to be anybody else.
Yeah, and I really like that, and I appreciate that. And I also really appreciate that you let people interpret, almost take what they need to from the painting.
Dave Matthews says, you know, as soon as you write a song, as soon as somebody else sings it, it no longer belongs to him.
Right, right.
And that's the way it should be, because the art isn't about me, it's about everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't belong to me. It belongs to the people who view it, and... You know, I've really been humbled the last couple of years in a lot of different ways. And I feel as though that with art, whereas before I viewed everything and everyone else as competition, now I just look at everything as pure love. And I have a great appreciation for everybody, and no matter what they do. And I'm still growing. You know, I'm still walking this path, and I look forward, and I'm very excited to see where it takes me and all the, you know, what I create next.
Well, that's wonderful to hear. And, I mean, I look forward to see what you create next. One of your paintings, it has very bright colors for a person. And does that kind of reflect what you saw whenever you had your brain injury, or is that just the way you like to present your paintings?
That's a good question. After I got my brain injury, everything was very, very brightly colored. And, you know, especially at night. During the day, you know, I had to wear, you know, sunglasses all day, every day. Like, it wasn't really much of a choice. And at night, everything became very vivid. You know, things that just looked like black before are now blue or brown or gold or green or purple or violet, you know. And the bright colors that I used, you know, back then, in my very, very, very early works, were very much so indicative of what I saw. And I was kind of guided by the geometric patterns that I would see.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas now, I still really enjoy using vibrant colors, especially in my latest pieces, but they're much more pastel-y, they're much softer.
Mm-hmm.
And the palette is much more limited, because I feel like I've become a much softer person in the last couple of years. At least that's my hope. And I want to be able to convey a very simple message now. And I want it to be aesthetically pleasing to people. Whereas before, I wanted to grab people and shake them with the art. Now I want people to kind of just be able to slide into it and feel like they've gone home.
I really like that. I really like, especially the way you describe that. I really like that. So, can you describe a typical day for you?
Well, of course. I get up whenever I wake up. And as soon as I open my eyes, I close them again and meditate for usually about 15 to 20 minutes. I focus on primarily gratitude, and then I focus on some of the goals that I have out in front of me and achieving those goals. And then I do a lot of detachment, and I detach from everything because I don't want to feel like I have to force anything in life. Like, it's just going to kind of come to me. After I'm done meditating, I typically get coffee. I'll have a cup or two of coffee. And then after I drink coffee,
That sounds like a really nice routine.
Yeah, it's solid. And I usually squeeze in a workout, but that's 5 days a week. I'll do some kind of, along with walking the dog, I'll typically do jump roping or something along those lines as well.
That sounds like a wonderful routine. Once I'm done with my J-O-B and move on to my passion, that is definitely a routine I would really like to have, is to be able to just kind of have an intuitive day. Because it definitely sounds like what you have is you have an intuitive day, and you have, you know, where you just kind of flow on through the motions of how you want to spend your day, and that sounds like a great routine to have.
Yeah, well, and I don't force anything.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a big fan of allowing. If I sit down to paint and it doesn't feel good, I won't do it. I'll go do something else. Or I'll go for a hike.
Right.
Or, you know, I'll busy myself with something else. Because, you know, I find that if I ever have to force doing something, I'm not going to do it. I'm simply not. I'm going to allow creation. Because art should not be a battle. It should not be a fight. It's a good time. You know, it's a good life. I enjoy it thoroughly.
That's good. I'm glad to hear that. You mentioned that you started writing, and I know that you finished your first book, and now you're writing your second book. What inspired you to start writing? Because you were mainly painting for so long, and all of a sudden you just started writing. Where did that come from?
Well, I think that, you know, I'm a big fan of the hero's journey, you know, and the archetypes that's of myth and legend, the lore. Also, I'm very much aware that there's a lot of things going on in the world that, you know, I think maybe need more light cast on them, that maybe people don't like to think about. So if you can tell a compelling story, and at the same time, maybe craft a story in a way that it will get people thinking about things that are going on in the real world, but tell the story in a way that's a lot of fun and easy to digest, perhaps you can do a dual service. Because, you know, ultimately, art, writing, music, you know, those are all the pillars of society. I guess I had an idea for a story. The book essentially is about a lot of the human trafficking things you hear about on the news, right? I think that's a big issue, especially for the kids, you know. And I kind of had this idea for a story, and I created a cast of characters, and hopefully they're compelling. I seem to think so. The editor seems to think so. Publishers seem to think so. So, we'll see what comes. I'm excited to see how everything turned out with that. It's going to be a lot of fun when the book gets released. So far, the demo readers have really, really enjoyed the story. It's quite long as far as book one goes. Book one topped out about 700 pages or so. You know, I would anticipate book two being somewhere around that mark as well. I'm already about 200 pages in on that one. You know, it's a process, you know, but there's a beginning and a middle and an end to everything. Right now I'm in the middle, and I'm enjoying, you know, telling stories about redemption and love and family and culture, because I'm very much obsessed with this wonderful world we live in and what we see in front of us every day. You know, we live in a very exciting time to be alive. I like to be a part of it. I like to be an active part.
Yeah, I like that. I mean, I'm very excited to read it. I am a huge reader. I am always reading to and from work every day. I read all the time, and so I love books. I want to have a free little library when we have a house, because I believe that everyone should have access to books. And so I think it's very inspiring that you're just, I'm just going to write a book. And I think that's awesome. I think it's really exciting.
It's a lot of fun. And, you know, it's a lot of fun to start on an ambitious project like that and not just see it through and finish it.
Right.
You know, it was definitely a labor of love. It took me about a year and change to write book one. And, you know, it was written on two different continents in three different countries, which is kind of neat too, you know. So I definitely took a lot of my world experience and a lot of classic storytelling. And, you know, I'm a huge nerd. I'm a reader myself. You know, and I love science fiction, and I love Harry Potter, and I love, you know, all this stuff that goes on. And I want to kind of, if I could capture one-tenth of Rowling's magic, then, you know, I feel like I've done a good job. And so far, the reviews have been very, very
Well, that's good. I feel like that's what's, you know, really important, is that it's something that you're proud of and that you feel good about presenting. Because that actually leads me to my next question is, have you ever had paintings that you've done that maybe you're not the biggest fan of, or you don't like the way it turned out, but everybody loves it?
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, generally, I like my art. You know, some paintings, you know, people always ask me, how do you know when a painting's done? And the answer I like to give is when I'm sick of looking at it. It's always surprising to me what people react to. Because some things I'll just cobble together in an afternoon, like, and I typically work pretty large. You know, 3x4 is the smallest size I typically do. 3 feet by 4 feet.
Mm-hmm.
5x4, 6x5 is more of my average scale. And of course, I'll do 8 feet by 6. The largest painting I've done is 36 feet by 6. And, you know, it's, I never know what people are going to like or not like. I'm working on cracking that code every day, you know, but ultimately, the art that I'm most proud of typically tends to be the simplest. It tends to be the things that I paint where I feel like I can convey the emotion and the story as efficiently as possible. Some of the paintings that I've done that I like the least, a lot of people seem to love, where, you know, I painted this one that I thought was just kind of, you know, middle of the road, and I posted it, and it got like 50,000 views. And people were like, oh my god, I love this. And I'm like, oh, really? Because that was just me playing around. But now, I tend to play around with everything I do. Everything I do is, don't take too seriously, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I enjoy in everything I do. And I love what I paint. You know, like right now, I'm doing this painting of furries, and I'm having a lot of fun painting furries, and I'm not a furry. I'm not, you know, and I think that they're fascinating. You know?
Yeah, definitely. They're interesting.
Yeah, super bizarre, but a very interesting subculture, you know. And I think it's kind of neat to be a part of that, you know, and just let people have a glimpse of the process too, because I like demystify art. I like to show people exactly, you know, when I go live and I paint, I all kind of explain to people what I'm doing, why I'm doing it, and explain to them how I do it. Because I think art should be accessible to everyone. You know, I don't think it needs to be like this cool kids club of the art world where people take themselves way too seriously.
Yeah.
You know, and everybody's a genius, and everybody, you know, everybody's, oh, you know. And in other words, if I have to read 3 paragraphs on why a painting's good, I don't think I'm going to like the painting anymore.
Exactly.
Does that make sense? It should hit me at a visceral level.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't need to write an essay or read an essay on why I should like the painting. I should just like it.
Yeah. I really liked whenever you did your series on some of the homeless people. Those sent such a strong message, and they were so inspiring. They were, I mean, to do something like that was so cool, and it feel like a lot of people could resonate with the message behind what you were doing.
Yeah, I loved that series. That was a lot of fun, you know. I nearly got stabbed.
Oh, my goodness.
Making that series, you know, because going up to homeless people and being like, hey, you know, mind if I interview you and take some photos of you, I'll happily buy you lunch or something, you know, because I want to paint and doing a series. You know, some people didn't take you kindly to that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and even now, I do work with a charity organization called the Sidewalk Project, where we go down to Skid Row and we'll do like these art days, and you know, hand out hygiene supplies and food and clothes. And you know, they're a wonderful organization. But still, it's that's another subculture. You know, that especially in cities like Los Angeles, where you have 65,000 people living on the streets, that's a lot.
Yeah.
You know, that's bigger than some towns, you know, than a lot of towns. So it's, but thank you. I appreciate that, Danny. That was a fun series to do. And I look forward to being of service, because I always jump on any chance I have to do charity. I think it's important. And another team of people I work with is a group of people called the Alexandria House, and that's a women's shelter in Los Angeles. They let women and their children stay there for up to 2 years while they get back on their feet. And they're wonderful. And, you know, I'm a big pay-it-forward guy, and if I can help out others while at the same time, you know, doing something that I love, then it's a win-win all around.
Yeah, definitely. My sister, actually, she lives out in Phoenix, Arizona. She used to work at a domestic violence shelter, and she would work in transitional housing. And one of her jobs, she would decorate their apartments for them. And so she had to know them and kind of reflect their personality into how she decorated their apartment. And she was, I mean, she was so gifted. She's gifted when it comes to home decor, but then also just in working with domestic violence. And now she works for the prosecutor's office, where she, the cases are then given to her. She has a job I probably could not have, but highly respect someone for doing it.
No, that's really amazing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that feels really good. You know,
oh, yeah.
To be able to do that kind of work, and it's hard. You know, it's really hard.
Yeah.
But it's rewarding also at the same time, isn't it?
Yeah, he's a very inspiring person.
Well, sure, and it's tough, you know. But yeah. Hey, if they ever want some art donated for a charity or anything like that, let me know.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
I'd be happy to.
So I have another question. I don't know if you can answer this question or not, but so. I have seen that you have some paintings that are celebrity owned, and if you can't say who, then that is fine, but also I just want to know, what was that experience like, being approached and saying, hey, I work for such and such, and they would love to own this piece of art?
You know, that's fun. I'm not sure if I can really name names, because everybody likes to have anonymity, right? But they're mostly like music people, like rock star type, have some of my art hanging up in their homes. And it's kind of fun. Like, I got to do the Kendrick Lamar music video for the Black Panther. I think it's called All the Stars.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, I got to do the background on that. That was a lot of fun. But ultimately, you know, celebrities are people just like you and I.
Right.
They just have to, I don't like to use the word lucky, but they've certainly learned how to manifest whatever they want, right?
Right.
Whenever anybody enjoys my art, you know, obviously they have really good taste. That's number one. and number two, I'm just grateful to have anybody look at it. You know, it's really an honor. You know, my friend Chaz, he's an artist, and like Oprah buys his art, and Obama buys his art, and like I'm like, wow, dude, that's a big deal. And he's like, oh no, it's not a big deal. I'm like, no, that's a super big deal, dude. You know. But I'm just grateful for every piece that's found a good home. I'm grateful for. That's what means the world to me. Whether it's, you know, whether it's a Grammy-winning celebrity or just, you know, somebody who's happened to see my art at an art show and they wanted to buy it. You know, it feels good. It feels good, you know.
Are there ever pieces that you don't want to part with?
No, I don't want to own any of my art. I want it to be in other people's homes. I want it to be in museums. I want it to be in galleries. As soon as the last brushstroke is done, it's not mine. It can go. I want my home filled with my friends' art and art that I love.
That makes sense, yeah. Have you ever destroyed your own art?
Oh, definitely. I would say probably 1 out of every 10 paintings I'm working on gets painted over and restarted again from the beginning. A lot of times also, like if I have old paintings that I've been sitting around that nobody's bought, I'll just paint over the canvas and start new and give it a new life. There's no sense in, you know, in keeping something around that doesn't flow with me, you know, especially when I can repurpose it. But that's what art is. Art is evolution. You know, since I've been painting for 4 years, and that 4 years is not a lot of time, I feel as though I've grown a lot. So sometimes when I look at my old stuff, it's hard to look at because I'm like, ugh, what was I doing, you know? But hopefully in 5 years from now, when I'm looking at the stuff I'm producing now, I'll be like, oh, what was I doing? So it's a constant growing process, and I look forward to seeing how everything unfolds and comes out.
I can agree with that.
Imagine, like, you start a diet, you weigh yourself, and you're, you know, let's just take a round number, you're 200 pounds, and you diet and exercise, and you don't really feel that much different. You get on scale, like, a month later, and you're like, oh, wow, I'm 185 pounds. You know, that feels good. It feels good to be able to look at something and see accomplishments.
Mm-hmm.
But also, you know, that's not taking away from the joy of doing it. You know, the joy of creating or the joy of writing. Like, I actually prefer writing much, much more than painting. I find it to be much more enjoyable. And the reason is, number one, it's clean. You know, it's not a messy process. You know, it's just me and my MacBook.
Right.
But also, you're not limited by anything. Anything that you can think of, you can create, right? Whereas with art, you're limited with the size of the canvas. You're limited with the medium. You're limited with the brushes. You're limited with the colors. But with your mind, you can create anything. anything you want in that world. You know, you can make anything happen. But the trick of it is doing it in a way that will reverberate within people. And they'll say, I want to live in that world too. I think that's the fun part. That's the challenge.
Oh, yeah. I mean, who has actually created those worlds? You know, J.K. Rowling did it.
Yeah. And look at Rowling. You know, she wrote the first Harry Potter when she was a single mother living off government assistance, unemployed, you know, until she got a teaching job and she finally got it published. You know, she's a hero, you know.
Oh, yeah.
You know, at least to me. I think she's magical, you know. And that's the thing. She's no more exceptional than you.
Exactly.
You know, or anybody else. You know, we're all capable of greatness. You know, and it just takes persistence and not giving up. That's what it boils down to, is never quitting. You know, there's been a lot of times where I'm like, why am I doing... In the art world, it's to put yourself out there, or with writing, it's hard. It takes a lot of bravery to put yourself out there and have people say, oh, this is no good. Or, you know, it happens to me all the time. I'll contact galleries that I want to show at, and they're like, oh, well, we're not really showcasing new artists right now, or we're not into emerging artists, or we don't like your art. That happens all the time, you know, and that's I always say, hey, you know what, thank you for at least taking the time to look. I really do appreciate it, because I do, you know, and that same thing happens to with literary agents. You know, I've queried, dozens of literary agents saying, hey, you know, here's the treatment for my book, here's the first couple chapters, give it a read and let me know what you think. And like, oh, well, we like it, but it's just not something that we're into right now, or this isn't exactly what we do, or this is a little bit dark for us, or it's like, yeah, but you got to get to the end of the story, you know?
Right.
Like, you know, and that's the thing. People pass on Harry Potter. People pass on The Hunger Games. People pass on Silence of the Lambs. People pass on a lot of the stories that we come to know and love. I got to sit down with Stan Lee several times and just have one-on-one conversations with him. Well, this is 20 years ago. And I asked him, I said, what was it like when you first started doing this? He goes, oh my God, we were broken penniless, but we believed in what we were doing. And we loved what we did. And we kept on doing it no matter what. You know, and look at Marvel today.
Yeah.
Right? That's a big deal. So it's believing in yourself and walking towards, like Neil Gaiman says, sometimes being creative, it feels like you're on a desert island. You're sending out messages in a bottle. And all you want is for one day, you know, somebody to find one of those bottles that you sent out and it to come back to you saying, hey, this is really good, or, you know, or this is something. You know, I'm a big fan of Gaiman also. And at the end of the day, no matter if any artist or writer or musician, I don't care what people think about my art. That's just simply not true. You know, everybody wants to feel like what they're doing matters.
Right.
I believe with what I do, I believe everything matters. I believe everything is important. Not that I'm so important, but that's everything that everybody does is important. You know, I think it's a much easier way to live life.
Yeah, definitely. J.K. Rowling, who actually said, rock bottom was the foundation on which I built my life. You know, because it's amazing, those people who just, they have nothing and they say, well, you know, I'll just give it a try, and because I've got nothing else to lose. It's inspiring to see those people, because I get really discouraged sometimes because I have given away a lot of products to businesses and said, you know, hey, here's a few samples of my products, here's some information, please, you know. I actually had someone tell a friend of mine, oh yes, please drop off some products, we would love to carry her products in our shop. And I reached out to them multiple times and no one ever got back to me. And so sometimes dealing with just that, not so much rejection, but just the non-response is, I would be okay if you just said no, but give me the respect of saying no. And I think that's where I need to learn to let that go a little bit.
Right. That's detachment. That's the art of detachment.
Yeah.
You know, because you know your products are good. And, you know, if you know what you're doing is solid, then you don't have to worry about what other people see and are not, because the right person will.
Right.
You just have to manifest that person.
Right, yeah.
You know, and it takes time.
What would you suggest for someone who's, you know, really trying to get that exposure and really get out there?
In the art world?
In general.
Okay, well, we'll start with the art world, and then we'll go more general.
Sure.
And number one, really get good at what you do. That takes elbow grease, right? Learn about your craft, no matter what it is, whether it's writing or acting or singing or playing in music or making art or starting a business. Find other people who have done what you want to do and have what you want, and reach out to them and be like, hey, you inspire me. How did you get from, because everybody started off at the same place. How did you get from there to where you are now? Because there is no such thing as an overnight success.
Right.
It just appears that way, right? And then, let's just say art. If for an artist, I would say, do is go out there where other artists are at big group shows and talk to them. Talk to the people who put on group shows and say, hey, you know, I would love to show my art here. I'd love to, you know, and get in touch with the community. Be known and be seen. And after you get known and seen, then, you know, start doing those group shows and then graduate from there. It's a leveling up process. Nobody goes from level 1 to level 10 overnight. You know, you start off at level 1 and then you grind and grind and grind and you get to level 2 and you grind and grind and grind and you keep on moving up the ladder. But the key is to never, ever, ever give up. Persistence is everything. Believing in yourself, manifesting. I'm a big fan of the law of attraction. I'm a big fan of believing that I can create the world that I live in. You know, and I can have anything or be anything I want to be, and nothing can stop me. No matter how many times that door gets closed in my face, I'm going to go knock on the next one. Because I want to live a life less ordinary. And everybody that you read about today, Elon Musk, Steve Jobs, you know, anybody, I guarantee you that they heard a lot more no's before they started hearing those yeses.
Absolutely. In one of my classes, there was actually, in one of my books, there was a story about how many times Abraham Lincoln heard no before he became the president. And I think it was like 47 times he was told no.
Yeah, it's amazing. But that's persistence. You know, that's not giving up. You know, we've all heard the story of people who own the gold mine. They stop 3 feet before they reach gold.
Right.
You know, that's important.
Yeah, my husband, there was actually a song he heard on the radio that he said, oh, this song made me think of you, because it said along the lines of, the word no doesn't exist in my vocabulary.
Yeah, and it shouldn't either, because you're not going to get to where you want to be if you stop at no.
Right. And I always tell myself, if, you know, and even something as simple as if I really like an article of clothing or a dress somewhere in a store and they don't have it in my size, then you know what? It wasn't meant to be mine. It's that plain and simple. It just wasn't meant to be. And so I guess I just need to realign with the thought of it wasn't meant to be yet. Now is not the right time.
And that's a big deal.
Yeah.
And everything that happens when it should. Because
exactly.
Imagine if you had wild success thrust upon you when you're not ready for it that could destroy you.
Right.
You know? Everything happens when it's supposed to happen.
Those were words that got me through a very hard time in my life. 2015 was a really, really hard year for me, and I found the words, trust the timing of your life, and those words got me through. To look back and just know, trust the timing of your life, and those words got me through every crappy thing that life threw at me that year, and those are strong words in my vocabulary.
Well, I think it's great, and I mean, there's people out there who look at your Instagram and they say, "Wow, I wish I could live her life.
Right.
Wow, she has it all." You know, that you're living their dream.
Right.
You know, I think that's important to realize.
Yeah, definitely. And then, you know, but then there's people that I look at and I think, you know, the exact same thing is, oh my gosh, look at them. They're, you know, look at the dream that they're living. And, you know, I also feel like that's part of why our professors encourage us to do these interviews is because, you know, we're learning from people that inspire us what we need to know to become those people that inspire us to get to that point. You know, so interviewing someone who handles ice cream. Have you ever heard of Handles Ice Cream?
No, I haven't.
They're actually out of Youngstown, Ohio, where I grew up. They had a gas station, and the wife made ice cream, and the gas station never made any business, and so they closed up and sold ice cream, and now they are at least all over the East Coast, all up and down the East Coast.
Isn't that funny how that works out?
Oh my gosh.
And, that's awesome.
Yeah. What I always want to ask people, what encouraged you to just, for lack of a better term, take the jump? To just say, I'm quitting my job of whatever it is that I'm doing, and I'm going to do this. I'm going to follow my bliss. For most people, that's the most terrifying thing, and that's why, you know, some people will never do it, because they're too scared to make that jump. And so, you know, that's what I always want to know, is what inspired, you know, if you, I know that you could no longer do your financial job.
Yeah.
Because of,
challenging.
Yeah.
Well, I would guess I'd say, you know, and I borrowed this quote from Jim Carrey that's really rang true for me, is that, you know, you can fail at doing what you don't love. So you might as well take the risk and fail at doing what you do love.
Yeah.
You know, because there's nothing worse to me than regret. You know, I never want to regret not following my passions or my dreams. And I spend too many years and too much energy, you know, trying to make everybody else happy. Now it's time for me to make me happy.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I've actually had the conversation with my boss whenever I went to him and said, you know, I want to get my master's degree. And he said, well, what do you want to do with it? You know, I said, this is what I want to do. I want to have this business. And I said, I'm going to be honest with you, Steve. My dream is to come to you and say, I can't work for you anymore. My business is taking up too much of my time. Bye. And that is my dream. And I look forward to that day. When I say, I'm sorry, my business, my bliss requires my full attention now. I have to leave.
Yep. And he did that at some point too. So I'm sure he totally got it.
Oh, yeah.
He totally gets it.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's awesome. Well, perfect. Do you have any more questions for me?
I don't think so. I think we've covered everything. I really, really appreciate it. I appreciate your time and your story.
It's been an absolute pleasure, Danny. If anything else springs to mind, give me a call or shoot me a text. I'm always here for you.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you, thank you, thank you. I really, really honor your time.
Oh, thank you so much.
All right. Bye, Dan.
Bye. Well, that was Danny Green, and make sure that you check the links below in my blog to check out his website and view some of his art. I'll also link his Instagram. Thank you so much for tuning in, entrepreneurs. Never stop learning and never stop creating. Have a great day.